think that we have a tendency to be our biggest critic. And a lot of times the voice that we have as adults are the voices that we had speaking to us as children, whether it's our parents or grandparents or other caregivers or teachers. We internalize those voices and they become our own voices. And that's why reparenting is such a huge part of the work that I do.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hours Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com and understandingautoimmune.com, where you can find all of our past episodes. We're over 425 past episodes there at Understanding Autoimmune. And I've got my tea with me. I got to tell you a little story about it. I had some family go to Europe recently and they came back with 4 boxes of my very favorite tea. So I'm just like, still my favorite tea. So find your favorite beverage there and really just curl up. And I'm so excited because I had lost track of my friend Laura Jack. And recently we reconnected and it's been so lovely to catch up with her. And we decided just to have a show because we haven't really talked about this topic too often. Laura Jack is the founder of the Compassion Code Academy, and she is a leading authority in the field of self-compassion and compassionate communication. With her unique expertise in reparenting and compassionate leadership, she empowers us to be self-compassionate and good positive self-talk to ourselves, because oftentimes I know at the height of sometimes in my flares, I don't always talk nice to myself. It's like, why now? Stop this kinds of things. So we're going to talk to Laura about how do we talk nice to ourselves, even if we're unhappy with the situation. So thanks for being back on the show, Laura. It's so nice to reconnect.
Thank you so much for having me. I think that what you just pointed out is so key and so valid. And so I'm so glad that we're going to go there first.
Absolutely. Well, even if it's just, I'm thinking of when I started this journey, I was very sick. And so I'm not sure I even had time for self-talk. It was all hands on deck recovery. But now further down the line, years down the line, and I know so much more and I know how to stay healthier. And then I don't know whether I'll overstress myself or I'll cheat on what I'm not supposed to eat, whatever. It'll be some little thing. And then I'll start talking to myself in a way like, oh, Sharon, you knew better than this, or you should have known. These kinds of, I don't think they're really helpful to the healing.
No, they're not. I think that you're right. I think that we have a tendency to be our biggest critic. And a lot of times the voice that we have as adults are the voices that we had speaking to us as children, whether it's our parents or grandparents or other caregivers or teachers. We internalize those voices and they become our own voices. And that's why reparenting is such a huge part of the work that I do, is we begin to talk to ourselves the way we wish that we had been spoken to as children. And it's not to blame or to be mad at our parents necessarily, because there's a need for forgiveness there, because they did the best they could with what their parenting was. And giving ourselves that internal positive reinforcement and affirmation and support is such a huge part of the healing journey. And so you're right. What's wrong with me? Why did I do it like that? Why is my body like so often the clients I have who have autoimmune diseases are so angry at their body. And one of the biggest things that I talk to them about is becoming allies with their body, becoming allies with this vessel that we get to live in as a human being, and really working to treat our body with kindness and love and respect, even when we don't really understand the signals and the communications it's trying to offer us, right? So I could talk about this all day long. It's super I'm super passionate about this topic. And so, yeah, just please tell me where you want us to go, because I want to be able to support the people here to the best of my ability with my particular expertise.
Now, the topic of reparenting, let's define it a little more detail. I know I raise my kids, and there were oftentimes during events, like something would come out of my mouth and, oh, that sounded just like my teacher, my mom, my dad, my grandma, whatever it was. And I'd say, oh, stop that. So that was very obvious to me, kind of moments where, oh, that happened to me as a kid, and I don't want that to happen to my kid.
Right. It's breaking those patterns. So reparenting is basically, it refers to the process of consciously and intentionally providing ourselves, each of us as individuals, with the care, support, and nurturing that may have been lacking in childhood or in earlier stages of life. It doesn't even have to be as a child. It could be teenage years with a boyfriend or a girlfriend or somebody who we liked, the way they treated us. So it involves cultivating this nurturing and compassionate inner voice and addressing unmet needs, healing emotional wounds, and developing a healthier pattern of self-care and self-compassion. So to me, that's what reparenting means. In the context of compassion and the work that I do, it's really about giving ourselves a chance to learn these strategies of how do we address our unmet needs? How do we create a nurturing, compassionate inner voice? How do we heal these deep emotional wounds that we carry? That's really where my passion lies, because yeah, you notice yourself like yelling at your kid and then being like, damn it, that was something my mom did or my dad said to me, and or me being like, God, what's wrong with you, Laura? And then I'm like, that's not nice. Like, I would never let somebody else talk to me like that. And so why am I talking to myself like that? And I'll even say, when my husband is like beating himself up, for example, I'll be like, hey, stop being mean to my husband. So like trying to find a way to help him break that pattern of his own self-critical, even external dialogue that he only shows to me, right? And so it's really about, to me, it's breaking old patterns and healing and creating a healing, nurturing environment for ourselves to live in, even inside of our own heads.
Okay. So the one thing that was going through my head, because I agree with all of that, and I want to say yes, and very easy for me to see when it comes out of my mouth and what it does to someone else. So, oh, that would be just like my parents said. But I vowed when I was six never to say that. So very easy to see. Very easy to see in a loved one, even though I wasn't in their childhood. But very easy to say, hey, stop being mean.
Don't be mean, my husband.
I'm not always aware of what I'm saying in there. Yeah. Is that not just me? Because sometimes it'll be fleeting. Or maybe it's just a couple of swear words. It's not the whole sentence, but somehow the subconscious fills in the rest of the sentence.
Right. Yeah. No, you're totally right. Like, how do we pause and give ourselves the space to even hear the internal dialogue?
Exactly. I'm not always aware that I'm not being nice in those moments to myself. I may not put it in those terms. Oftentimes it's frustration. Is that one of my warning signs? Like, if you're frustrated, maybe you're not talking nice to yourself.
Especially if you're frustrated with something that you did. I notice it when I feel shame. If I'm feeling shame, like I'll give you an easy example. I took my kid to school and I was late and they closed the gate to the school. So you have to go. It's like the shame gate. It's a different kind of walk of shame, right? Because now I'm walking your walk of shame when you're in your 20s. It's like going home with your makeup on and then a dress, like walking on the street. The walk of shame in your 30s and 40s is walking your kids in late to school and having to use the beep gate on the side and walk them in instead of driving them up to the school. And so I felt myself feeling this major sense of shame and being like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Why can't you get the kids to school in time? What is this saying about your dedication and commitment to your children? Like, all these shame thoughts came flooding in. So anytime I feel like embarrassed or shame, I'm like, ooh, I'm definitely like beating myself up here. Or say that I didn't do well on something, or like somebody gets mad at me, then I'm shaming and blaming myself for that instead of self-compassion, which, oh, I made a mistake. I'm so sorry. To me, feelings are information to let us know when we're beating ourselves up, right? So it's like, okay. So it's like taking a breath, slowing down, noticing, particularly like the shame feelings, like, God, like embarrassed, shameful. I can't believe I did that. I should have gone to the gym today. Shoulds are really helpful clues. I should have called her. I should have gone to the gym. I should have done this. I should have done this. I should have not eaten that. All that's judgment. Shoulds are just a heaping judgment pie, right? Like it's just a judgment pie that you're putting on yourself. And so when that happens, we can take that breath. So what would I like to do instead? So I like to pause. I like to think of it as putting a little bouncer in front of my brain.
A big old guy in a nightclub bouncer?
Like a little nightclub bouncer in front of my brain being like, oh, you don't get to come in here. Oh, you don't get to come in here. So I'm making it so it makes it playful, but it's also those thoughts don't get to come into my brain because thoughts create feelings, create actions, create reality. So when we think those things, we act a certain way. Like when I feel bad about myself, I'm not very nice. I don't know about you.
Bad about myself. I'm not very nice to myself. And I think family and friends will say, you're not very nice outside either.
It starts to come out sideways because we aren't processing it. Right. And so the bouncer on the brain is that nice? So even if the only indicator should could be your number one red flag that you're probably shoulding all over yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. I shouldn't have eaten that. What's wrong with you? Why did you like you got this flare because you weren't paying attention to your body? Is that helpful? So that part is judging you, trying to motivate you to do better, right? Like the positive intention is that it wants so that you feel well. There has to be a better way than negative motivation, right? Like judgment and shame.
Oh, absolutely. Although I have a question. If you were raised that way, I'm thinking of my generation because I'm a couple generations past you, Laura. So I'm thinking my generation, thinking of the whole neighborhood. Shame was a big motivator as a child in my greater community and cultural environment.
That's why so many of my clients are your age, because they need the loving mothering that they didn't get because they were taught by their mothers. My grandmother was a major shamer for my mother, and my mom vowed to not be that for me, and she did better, significantly better, but it still got passed through.
Yeah.
And so it's my work is to now, I like work with a lot of women who are in their 50s and 60s who didn't have that as a mother, who had mothers who shamed them into, oh, are you going to wear that? Oh, are you going to go with that boy or whatever? Like all that kind of language that I heard my grandmother talking. I heard how my mom was treated. And yeah, there was a lot of shame motivation. And to me, like, I don't do well with being shamed as a motivation tool. I might do it, but then I feel even worse.
I agree with that on both sides, whether I'm the one doing the shaming or it that falls out of my mouth accidentally, I know better, or the one who's either shaming myself or feeling the shame.
Wow.
Yet, to me, it's still in that stage of learning where I'm consciously competent in it. Yeah, I'm still consciously working on the competency of making it consciously competent. Because when you're raised with all of that, I find that it just falls out of my mouth in those moments where maybe I've been surprised or frightened or hurt. It just really falls out of my mouth. So besides our little brain bouncer, which I love the visual metaphor of that, trying to like, now what would that that thing, is it a thing? Is it a person? What would it be?
Exactly. I love that.
Beyond that, let's say, are there other tips to repair once it's fallen out of our mouth? But are there ways we can short circuit it before it falls out of our mouth?
I think, I don't know who said this originally. I love this quote. It says, the difference between a reaction and a response is a breath.
Oh, I love that.
Taking a breath when you're upset buys you a moment of time. And then the bouncer might be able to then hold that back and actually process it. Because it's not about just holding it back. It's actually about retraining yourself to then treat yourself kindly. I've been learning that I actually am not motivated by being judged. Like I shrink and I get really contracted. When people are hard on me, I'm hard enough on myself. I don't need other people to be hard on me, right? And so I've been really working on motivating myself through what I'm excited about. Like, what do I want to move toward rather than shame motivating, where it used to be like, oh, what's wrong with you? Why do you do that? You're so fill in the blank, negative thing, I think. So taking that breath, giving the bouncer a second chance to prevent that from coming out. Rest is a big one for me. If I'm rested, I have a tremendous amount of more patience than I do when I'm not rested. So getting sleep in whatever way, if that means like taking a program to figure out how to sleep well or whatever those things are. For me, it's about just going to bed earlier because I have a tendency to want to stay up late. And then when I'm not rested, I have a tendency to be a lot harder on myself. I'm a lot less patient with others. And those things fall out a lot more easily because I don't have as much capacity. So if I'm drinking water and I'm eating and I'm getting enough rest and I take that pause, my capacity to handle those difficult moments, whether they're with myself or with my children or with my partner or with strangers in the street or on the road. Does that make sense though?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm the same way about sleep. If I don't get enough of it, and interestingly, I need far more than my family members do. So having them understand that's an important thing, that yes, you function very great with X number of hours, but I don't.
And I need 10 hours, or I need 2 naps in the day, or whatever, because we're all of our bodies are unique. And that's a really good place to check in. Am I giving myself a hard time for needing more sleep? And this might not be for you, Sharon, but maybe somebody else out there is like, what's wrong with me? Why do I need 9 hours and my friend can function on 5 hours? Because we're all made differently. And so it's like, that's a good place to check in. Am I judging myself compared to someone else? Comparison is the thief of joy, is so they say, right? And so just like not comparing what you need or your needs to somebody else's needs. Right. Another really awesome little tip that I love is benefit of the doubt thinking. So benefit of the doubt thinking, I like to use for other people, and I've been working on using it for myself. What's the benefit of the doubt here for when I mess up, for when I make mistakes? And the benefit of the doubt is like, gosh, I really am like, I have a lot of weight I'm carrying right now. I'm really worried about this. No wonder it came out. So what is the benefit of the doubt that I can give myself? Because I give other people the benefit of the doubt so easily. I am constantly being like, oh, they're probably fill in the blank story that I made up about them. And so if you struggle with benefit of the doubt for others, practice. That's a great one. It's like my husband's so funny when we're driving along and somebody cuts him off. He's like, oh, that guy must have to poop. Because immediately, one, it makes it hilarious. And two, then you're like, get there, get wherever you're going, because we all have had the moments where we needed to go to the bathroom and we're stuck in traffic, right? And so if we like put it in that frame, then all of a sudden the guy who's mad in this big truck and giving you an angry face, you're like, I would be mad too if I had to poop. It just makes it so light. And then it's like a lighthearted doubt thinking that can like diffuse road rage in an instant. Then starting to give myself that same level of kindness and compassion that I so generously offer to everybody else. That is a great one. So it's like, huh, I wasn't very patient with my kids today. I wonder what's going on with me. And like checking in and not being like, what's wrong with me? I wonder what's going on here. The tone is so different. It's so tender and gentle. So that's a big one that I work on for myself. And Sharon, I just want to say to you that being consciously, like moving unconscious competence, is like the last bit, right? I think we live in conscious competency in this area of self-compassion for most of our journey. Being kind to ourselves is probably one of the most difficult things to do. So if you have to be consciously competent about it, meaning like you have to think about it every time, that's normal. I think that's really normal. The fact that you are having to think about it is a great piece of your practice, right? It's a practice.
It absolutely is a practice. And one of the things I talk a lot about is, which is tangential to this, is boundaries. And often people can train themselves and get pretty good at setting boundaries between themselves and other, whether it's community members or closer in family members. And yet they don't set boundaries for themselves. Like, I wouldn't talk to my child like that. I have a boundary with myself. I just don't talk like that to others. Yeah, I don't set those same boundaries for myself. And I always find that so fascinating when I'm talking to people about this idea of what boundaries you don't cross for others, yet you cross them all the time for yourself.
That actually brings up another tip, which is mirror work. One of the first times I ever created a boundary with myself was looking in the mirror, realizing how critical I used to be of myself. And instead, every time I caught myself being like, ugh, like the faces that we make when we look in the mirror, which is terrible, where we're like, oh God, just so mean. I started being like, I'm going to share my mantra, which is, for some people, it's going to sound kind of goofy, but it's worked really well for me, which is, I am a goddess of inner and outer beauty. And so every time I looked in the mirror and started to like make that ugly face that I made when I was judging myself, I'd be like, toss that out. The bouncer got his way. He's like, nope, you can't come in here. And then I replaced it with, I am a goddess of inner and outer beauty. And the first 150 or 250 times that I said that, it was really uncomfortable. And then I started feeling like that. And it really changed my life. And when I found out I was having a daughter, I decided that I wasn't ever even going to have those thoughts inside of my head, because I know kids can read our minds. They definitely pick up on all the stuff. And so I was like, I'm not going to even think poorly about myself, because I never want my daughter to think that way about herself. So that was a huge motivator for me. And that's been a beautiful journey for me over the last 9.5 years.
Oh, absolutely. I think my kids have been a huge motivator for me. And this was years ago when I hadn't even thought about it. But we were talking about the faces we make. I remember they were teen years, so there was a little different dynamic in the relationship. But I remember them, so my older one saying to my younger one time when we were traveling, oh, mom's making that face. Let's get scarce. So apparently I did something with my eyebrow and my eyeballs. They both knew that when that was happening, something was going on that they'd rather not be around for. So I found that kind of fascinating. And I think about that a lot, because I wasn't consciously aware of that. So picking up on those cues that other people give you from the outside and then internalizing them in a way, okay, what was that about? What did that mean? And what part of me is doing that and why? I found that was a fascinating exploration.
Yeah, for sure.
Taking that external feedback and not taking it personally, other than to say, that was interesting. What's that about? And what's my own work behind why I would be, I'll put in air quotes, triggered to the point where people close to me would go, oh, whenever we see that.
We're out of here.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that our kids are beautiful teachers for us and mirrors, and our partners too, because they see things, they're up close and personal with us. So they see things that we aren't able to see for ourselves. And I think one of the greatest parts of compassion is curiosity. I wonder what they saw that I'm unable to see. That curiosity is compassion for yourself and for them. And curiosity that, I wonder, is a great way to shift out of judgment and into curiosity. That's one of the language tools of the bouncer. I wonder what this thought, why this thought is trying to get in here. And then being curious about how we can shift it is a really a good strategy for that.
Sarah Payton uses a term, I wonder. She's been a guest on our show several times, and she uses the term, I wonder, as well in many delightful ways, such as you do. And I find that just changing our tone of voice around, just using the preamble, I wonder, and saying it more in a whisper to ourselves versus the bouncer voice, and how the many ways we can use I wonder to get our attention. I just love those two words, because I find them very self-soothing and a way to bring myself to center. But whether I'm using my bouncer voice to stop me from doing something in the moment, or I'm using more of a whisper, maybe the lullaby voice, I wonder.
Your bouncer could have a lullaby voice that you get to decide.
Right. I think I have more than one voice in there. I think I prefer a couple of different voices. To me, the bouncer is the one who stops it from falling out of my mouth. without thinking.
And might even stop it from coming in and then being self-critical.
Right. Which is a different I wonder than more of a, after I get past that point of, oh, a self-soothing I wonder what else would serve me in this. I wonder what I'm looking for right now. I'm wondering what I'm needing right now. I'm wondering, which is a very different voice from my other wonder. But I've always been a fan of the two words, I wonder, in self-talk. I find them really helpful for diagnosing a lot of things without getting super critical with myself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
We need to take a quick commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Laura some more about compassion and understanding some strategies, more strategies, because I love the metaphor of the bouncer there. So we'll talk some more about self-compassion. We'll be right back.
The Autoimmune Hour will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by understandingautoimmune.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, from that quick commercial break. I'm here with Laura Jack. She's a dear friend of mine, and she is the founder of the Compassion Code Academy, and she's a leading authority on the field of self-compassion and self-talk and compassionate communication with others. And we've been talking a little bit about all of Laura's such a wealth of knowledge. We jumped right into the tools, but I want to back up for just a second and ask your definition, Laura, of self-compassion.
Yeah, so it's so important. So self-compassion to me is about relating kindly to myself during times of change or challenge. And with life being full of change and challenge, it's about being kind to yourself all the time. So relating kindly to yourself, relating kindly. So it's not, it's like in my book, I talk about some of Kristen Neff's work. She does a lot of work around self-compassion. I love her. But one of the things she differentiates between, and I talk about this, the Compassion Code is really about the difference between self-esteem and self-compassion. Self-esteem is so often in comparison to, so it's like we have to be better than somebody else in order to feel good about ourselves. It's like, I must elevate myself. But self-compassion is so beautiful because it has nothing to do with anyone else. It's all about relating kindly to ourselves. It's not about your achievement. It's not about what you've done. It's just about relating to yourself in a kind way. So does that make sense? Those two kind of differentiations, like self-esteem is like what we've used as a major tool in our society to see if we're doing well, right? Like how confident are you and all that kind of stuff? How much have you achieved? And self-compassion really has nothing to do with that.
That's a wonderful definition. And I love the comparison between the two. And it got me to thinking about in my, since 2015, since I started the Autoimmune Hour and all the shows I've done and people I've met, one of the things that I have found, which is interesting, this is the science of Sharon, guys. Okay, this is not, I'm just saying this is something that I've put in the, isn't that interesting file in my brain, that the majority of people I meet that have on the autoimmune spectrum are very empathetic and are very quick to give big parts of themselves, emotionally, spiritually, all of that, to other people. And yet it's very difficult for them to give that same amount of love and what I see outwardly expressed inwardly. Now, like I said, this is the science of Sharon, but I've just found it fascinating that a lot of people that I would say are more empathic than others that I meet oftentimes have health challenges. I don't think that's probably just a coincidence.
I have to agree. I really do feel like there's a huge correlation with autoimmune and being a highly empathetic person, because it's almost as if we take on the weight of the world and it's almost crushing us. And if you're open to it, I'd love to share some of the ways that I've stayed really healthy as a healer myself, both as a massage therapist, as a coach, as a consultant, working with people of all kinds, with all kinds of challenges. I was a trainer for the Grief Recovery Institute for over a decade and have worked with over 1,000 grievers, much less like trained over 1,000 people in the grief recovery method. And so I've been around grief and loss a lot. And I asked myself this not even a year ago. I was like, how have I stayed so well when so many of my colleagues and counterparts are struggling so much with their own personal health? And the answer is a little, there's some woo to it, right? But I am a Taurus as my sign. My sun sign is Taurus. Taurus is all about pleasure, right? It's all about earthly pleasure. And not, it doesn't have to be sexual pleasure. It's like pleasure of any kind. Our senses, right? Being sensorial, right? Like water, sound, movement, right? All the ways in which we are very human are things that I love, even beautiful things. Like I wear lots of rings and I have like pretty earrings and I'm always wearing cool stuff. I love to adorn myself with beautiful things, even if it doesn't have to be expensive. It's just about feeling beautiful and seeing beauty. I love nature. If you could see on the other side of my screen, I have these big oak trees in my front yard that I can see and they're so beautiful. So it's so much green. I love to be in water. So like for me, the key element of healing ourselves, whether we have an autoimmune disease or any other emotional or mental health challenge, is through pleasure, play, and personal expression. So those are the three key elements to me for being in homeostasis as a person who is highly empathetic, not just having boundaries. Those are important, of course. And what do I fill myself up with? Not only do I block things out, that's the boundary, right? I need to not take on other people's stuff, right? And I can get to that in just a minute. First, though, I want to talk about play. How do we play? How do we reconnect with our childlike joy and wonder, right? And it goes back to that curiosity, right? How do I play more? Life can get really hard, right? Especially when you're not feeling well. So play might look different when you're not feeling well than when you are a little, like little kid. How do I bring some play back into my life? That can be as simple as maybe you want to learn how to crochet, or maybe that's playful for you. Maybe it's like sitting on the floor with your grandkid or with your child and not having your phone next to you. It can be really simple stuff. It doesn't have to be complicated. Play. Like for me, it's like being silly sometimes, right? Like allowing myself to have fun.
For me, it's cooking with my grandkids. We might have a base recipe, but they'll say, can we add M&Ms? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's find out.
Let's try it.
Sometimes we have to admit, yeah, that wasn't such a good idea.
But we won't know unless we try.
Exactly. And since then, we've developed our own little recipe books where we
know. Awesome.
Like we have a chia seed pudding pie. Now, there's a long story about what's all in that, but it's actually a pie.
And you don't forget it. Don't you forget that it's
exactly
a pie.
Exactly. So we have our own little recipes now that are based, obviously, on other recipes. I find the most fun is they're not restricted to the recipes. It's just not in their thing. So it's, well, what if we add this? And I just go with it. I don't know. Let's find out.
Dancing in the kitchen, right? Like it can be so easy. And I think play and pleasure are very connected. Like for me, pleasure is doing that, like using my hands to knead dough or help sitting out in the garden and pulling out weeds. I love like how I get a lot of pleasure out of when it's not too hot outside, out of just the feeling of plucking the weeds out of the ground and like how gratifying that is. I know it sounds silly, but it just, for me, it fills me up. And I love being in water, whether that's in a pool or in the ocean, in the shower, in the bath. Just, I love like letting the water just cascade and feeling it on my body. And I love amazing smells. I have so many like little tinctures and potions and candles. I'm always like smelling deliciously delightful little potions and stuff that I love to, I have sprays. I have all these like body sprays that I use, and it just, the senses, it's just like gives me so much pleasure. Eating a delicious chocolate. I love like flourless chocolate torte. I love just like taking a bite and just letting it melt in my mouth. So what about you? What are some of the things that bring you pleasure, Sharon?
Oh my goodness. I love gardening. And I think walking in the woods, that big old woods around here where I live in the Pacific Northwest. You lived here with nearby. I think a cool morning where it's still dew on everything and walking through the woods is some of my most pleasurable time. I also, when it's hot outside, I love to find a stream or a lake around here and just put my feet in it. I'm not much in getting into 65-degree water.
Understand. Exactly.
But I just find putting my feet on the edge of a stream in the woods, that's some of my most pleasurable times.
Yeah, it's amazing. Nature is really nourishing for the soul for me as well. And I feel like a lot of people actually take a lot of pleasure in being in nature.
I'm lucky where I live. I have 12 big oak trees on my property too. So we share these oak trees. And there's just something wonderful about having these great big grand trees shading your yard and your house and all of that. It's wonderful. And I don't think a lot of people really spend enough time in nature. And you don't have to have a big thing.
No.
I have friends that live closer into the city and they've got little houseplants or of little flower gardens on their balconies. I think anytime we can put living plants and things like that around us, it's so wonderful and healthy. And then spending that time in nature with my grandkids is a lot of fun too. I get a lot of pleasure from both of them. And when you put them together, that's even double the pleasure.
That's awesome. I love it. So the third piece of this is personal expression. So personal expression to me is, I have about 50 journals. I love to write. I love to sing and dance. I love moving my body. I love like dancing to the music. I love movement in general for me is a personal expression. But I love to write. Some people play music. Some people, you could drum or play the guitar or play music on your body, like beatboxing, whatever. But for me, personal expression is another huge one, whether that's like for the public eye and writing books and blogs, or if it's just personal, it doesn't matter. But personal expression is a huge part of my healing as well, as like just taking time with myself. Personal expression can also be spirituality, right? Your connection with something bigger than yourself, which could be nature, but could be like God or whatever people's own version of that is, right? So I think those are the three things, the three main elements that have kept me healthy in spite of all the pain and heartache. And in a minute, after we hear what your personal expression is, which we know one of them is having a podcast and writing books, but I'd love to hear. And then I want to share one last little tip as it relates to how to stay well. So I want to hear though from me. What are some of your personal expressions maybe that we don't know about yet?
Okay. Yeah, as you said, obviously the podcast, and this definitely is a labor of love because it's not related to my career. It's becoming a career now, which the original intention was finding out more about autoimmune. And as I learned, I was like, wow, that took a while to learn. I'm going to share it with others. So maybe it's an easy way for other people to learn what I'm doing all this research on. And a lot of my friends, they call it an irrational passion because it can take up several days of my week, which I'll say sometimes cut into the thing that pays the bills. But it's true. I do love this. I do love expressing this way as well as writing. I do a lot of writing. I do a lot of journaling, and that I don't share. That's personal journaling. And I find that very helpful too. And sometimes when I might start getting down on myself, I go back to the journals and I am able to see maybe I've been there before and this is what I did to get out of it. Sometimes it's my own little visual memory of things. During the pandemic, I moved. I don't recommend that, by the way, moving in a pandemic.
But I did too.
During the pandemic, I moved. And one of the things I came across, I put it aside years ago. I put aside my drawing and my paintings. And as I was moving, I came across several folders of these works. And it was interesting that showing my grown kids, like, wow, Mom, you drew that? Yes, honey, at one time I did. And so I actually started my painting again. But it was interesting how it's something I love to do. And then I can't really say other than life intervened and it got put aside, and pulling out, finding something like, oh, and then reminding myself, this was one of my self-talks, was like, maybe I'm not as good. Because when you're learning this, there's always somebody next to you with an easel that you're like, wow.
Yeah, but it's not really about that. You know?
Absolutely. And so here, a few decades later, you pull it out and you're like, I was pretty good. I have the skill.
Art is such a beautiful personal expression. Have it, even if it's coloring in a coloring book.
Exactly.
It's therapeutic.
Yeah, that's my personal expression now, is I love to draw.
That's so awesome. I love learning that about you. Thanks for sharing.
I haven't ever shared that on the show before. Oh, she draws too.
Yeah, you're going to have to show us some of your artwork.
Some of my artwork is rather irreverent. I came across one, which actually my kids wanted me to hang. It's so funny. A magician's hat that's fallen. And I often think back to when I drew that. It's all in pastels. And I think about that and I like, I wonder really what was going through my mind and my world at the time that I can't really remember. I know when I drew it, but I'm trying to think back, like, why would that enter your head?
It seems interesting interpreting that. Like, from my perspective, it's like there's a little bit of lost magic. Like, there's some lost magic there.
There
like,
could be. There
the hat's falling and it's killing the bunny inside. And
it didn't kill the bunny. It's just flattened. Totally different. You know how Wile E. Coyote always gets back up?
Yeah, exactly.
That's my rabbit. Wile E. Coyote just pops right back up, sort of shakes themselves off.
Off totally. That's another great tool, is shaking. for people to release. If you've been in a situation with people and it's really negative or icky, or you felt like you got home and you're like, ugh. Shaking is such a great, I call it the possum dance, because you know possums play dead and it really works, right? Like they lay there and they actually let off the pheromones and the hormones to let other animals know that they've died. And unless it's a vulture, which eats dead matter, every other animal is not really that interested. And so they play dead until the other animal leaves. And when they know that the animal's gone, they get back up, but it's a super slow getting back up. And then they shake it out like a dog shakes after a bath. A huge trauma release for us as humans that we don't allow ourselves to do.
Oftentimes, if I'm dealing with my work around tough talks and crisis communication work, one of the things we do, because we can build up the energy, even though we're not in the middle of a crisis, a little short video I play of a golden retriever getting out of the lake and it does its little shake off thing. It's all like, shake like the golden retriever. Everybody,
exactly.
Golden retriever is such a wonderful, lovely dog.
Exactly. Yes. I love
it's
that.
It's a nice, safe visual to remind people it's okay to shake.
Yeah. Shake it up.
Yeah. The one thing I like to tell people to do, Laura, if they're in that, but they can't really shake, like everybody's going to be looking at me if I start shaking and get worried about me, is just roll your shoulders really quick.
Yeah. Or I like doing like handshakes like this. People don't usually judge you for this. They're like, or you like shake it like you've washed your hands.
Exactly.
And, but it shakes your arms too, which is really nice.
So which way you can do it in public and still be okay without people. Do you need help?
I actually sometimes will put on headphones when I go for a walk so that I can like have a conversation with my mother, even though she's dead. And so if people think I'm weird, she's just on the phone.
Exactly.
It's not that I need to justify it. It's that I don't want to have to explain myself. No, I just need to talk to my mom. And doing it on a walk is what feels good to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. When headphones first started to be a thing, and especially the ones that were wireless, I grew up in the age that if you were walking down the street and somebody was talking to themselves, you wanted to be a little cautious, move to the side. And now it's just like, whatever. They probably got earbuds under their hair or whatever. So it's fascinating.
Well, and you know what's really interesting? I always say that one of the things we can learn from people who we've judged for talking to themselves is like the power of talking to ourselves consciously. Yeah. It's actually a really beautiful gift that we can give ourselves, that we've had all this judgment as a society against people who talk to themselves. It's a great tool. It's an incredible tool where I'm like, I am a goddess of inner and outer beauty. Or talking to my inner child and like giving my inner child a pep talk. It's okay, honey. Guess what? We grew up. We got married. I have kids. I have a business. You're doing great. And I know this hurts you right now. So I'll have these conversations with my little girl as an adult because nobody told me that I was going to be okay. And so there's some part of me that still holds on. Like I'll find myself being upset about something. I'm like, what is that about? Even my daughter having conflict at school with other little girls, I'm like, why am I so upset about this? She's not upset. This is my stuff. And then I like, oh yeah, I remember that. And so I'll just sit with myself and have a little conversation with my little girl, being like, I remember when you didn't get invited to that birthday party. That really hurt your feelings. It's okay. I understand. It's okay that you felt that way. And then I just gently reparent myself. Lovingly connect with myself and just give myself the love that maybe my mom didn't know how to give me because she was defending. She felt defensive. So she was like, oh, that girl's such a whatever, maybe being mad at her instead of comforting me, which was obviously a sign of her love for me as well. And I needed the comfort. And like what I wanted was comfort to be like, you're okay. And it's okay to be sad. And it's not a personal thing about you. It's probably something else that's going on with her, which I came later to find out that it absolutely was something that was going on with this friend. And so anyway, these are the kinds of things though, that going back to that internal dialogue, like when I'm feeling triggered or shutting myself or having feelings that clearly aren't related to the person, those are the moments that I get to come back in and have that kind conversation with myself.
Oh, wow. We're just down to the last 5 minutes, Laura. When I get together with you, time flies.
And it really does.
I've missed you. What would you like to share in closing? And then I know that you have a couple of really cool things that you have. I'm really interested in the self-wealth, not like W-E-A, but W-E-L-L-T-H. I guess that's how you say it. What are some final thoughts you'd like to share and then how people can find about you and your wonderful free gift for us?
So I think just the last thing I'll say is when you are blaming or shaming yourself for what's wrong with me or what's wrong with my body, especially when it comes to autoimmune or really anything, honestly, because there's a lot of things that we do that to ourselves. I want you to remember that you and your body are allies, because your body, even though it's not working the way you want it to, it's probably trying to communicate something with you. My best friend has an autoimmune disease, and at some point we were hanging out one night, and she was like, I think it'd be really fun to come back as a ghost and just come and see all my friends and family. I was like, can you imagine how frustrating it would be to be a ghost? You're trying to connect with your family, you turn the light on and you freak them out. And she was like, oh yeah, I never really thought about that part. I was like, you try to leave them signs and they don't realize it's a sign. Like, you're constantly coming as a bird or a penny or whatever all the things are that we think. And she was like, huh. I was like, your body's that. So we started calling her body ghost body. Body's trying to communicate with you, but it can't communicate with words. So it has to show you, and it starts as a whisper. And then slowly it turns into a scream. Like, sometimes we're in massive pain, inflammation, flare-ups, et cetera. And it's like, huh, oh, body, so you have a message for me, right? So like the voice becomes this gentle, loving voice in curiosity and discovery rather than anger, like you're against me. So if you can shift your perspective to gather that your body is working for you, towards you, it might be confused and have some like mismatched synapses going on. And it's trying to give you a message. It's giving you some kind of message. So if you can befriend your body and start being curious the way you would to your own child or your inner child, like we've been talking about, you might be able to heal your relationship with your body rather than being so angry at it for not working the way you want it to. And that could begin a beautiful relationship that will create healing and more happiness in your life, whether it heals your physical body or not. I can't make that claim. And your peace will be greater. The peace you will have with yourself will be greater, which will create a more balanced life. So I hope that is helpful. I've seen the transformation in my best friend through her autoimmune, through her creating a healthier relationship with her own body. So I wanted to make sure I shared that with you all. And the self-wealth assessment that Sharon was talking about, it's on my website, which I'll give you the link. It's just thecompassioncodeacademy.com/self-wealth. But again, I'll give it to Sharon because there's a dash in there somewhere. And it'll go in the show notes.
Right.
And so they can go check that out. But basically, the goal is for you to sit with yourself for 3 to 5 minutes, depending on how long it takes you to answer the questions, and really check in, like, how well, W-E-L-L-T-H, how well am I treating myself? How compassionate am I with myself in all these different categories? So how do I talk to myself? How do I treat my body? How easily do I forgive myself and others, et cetera? So if you have 3 minutes and you want to find out, there's 4 categories. There's on fire, meaning you are like fully compassionate with yourself. Catching fire, meaning you've been doing some work. So like Sharon, what we were talking about earlier, it sounds like you're catching fire. You're in the conscious competency. And then there's the kindling, which means that the kindling's all there. We just got to blow on that fire, right? And then the final one is ember. And that means, again, there's still the glow. There's something in there, but we might just need a little bit more nurturing for that ember to be able to catch fire and become the full flame. So I would encourage you to check that out and just check in with yourself. It's a great personal reflection tool. So that's what I got.
Fantastic. Thank you. And Laura, before you go, tell us about the Academy.
So the Academy is a leadership and communication training, essentially for service-driven leaders who have a tendency to give it all away. They're really great for everybody else that at the end of the day, they're burnt out, frustrated, spread thin, recovering, or still in the people-pleasing perfectionism part of life, right? Where it's like very self-critical, but that's coming out and it's not serving them in their leadership style, in their relationships with their personal, like family and friends. And so this is a place where they can come, reparent themselves, and learn compassionate leadership skills so that they can transform the way they lead to be like love-based leadership instead of fear and self-criticism, which kind of comes out whether they mean to or not. People have a tendency when they're spread thin and burned out to not be as patient, not be as able to show up in the ways they want. So it's a communication training in order to really have difficult conversations around tough stuff. And then ultimately, how do we lead then with compassion? So how do we love ourselves? How do we communicate kindly with each other? And then how do we lead? It's a 12-week online intensive training, but it is something that I love witnessing people go through. So thanks for asking.
Oh, absolutely, my dear. So everyone, that's Laura Jack. Check out all of her courses and her book, The Compassion Code. It's a fabulous book. And everyone, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Thank you for being a member of our podcast community. Love you all and see you next week.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.